Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, for the first time in a couple of episodes, is none other than my Welsh co-host, Miss Change the Overs herself, Lucy Rees. So Lucy, first things first, mate, good to have you back on the podcast. Always a pleasure to have you here on TCCP. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, good. Fairly early, so I've pushed my working day back for this, but yeah, looking forward to it.
Exactly, Lucy. It's fantastic to have you back as well. And of course, there is a very, very special reason why we are up here so early in England and Wales, of course, today. Because on today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast, we're joined by a rather special guest. Now, our guest today is a right-arm off-spinner who has played for my county of Warwickshire in the 2019 T20 Blast, and who more recently in 2021 enjoyed a rather successful stint with Middlesex County Cricket Club. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to today's guest here on the County Cricket Podcast, Australian T20 superstar, Chris Green. So Greeny, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat. Again, I'll ask you the exact same question. How's your day been so far, mate?
Well, my day here is nearly done. So good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. But I am stuck in hotel quarantine. So my day is okay. It's probably the best it can be, considering I'm stuck in a room and have been stuck in the room for the best part of 8 days or 9 days now. And there hasn't been too much head banging against the wall today so far. It's probably a good day.
Fair enough, Greeny. And of course, for our listeners out there, because they don't know this, but whereabouts are you quarantining in Australia?
I'm in Melbourne. So coming back from the CPL after playing for Middlesex, I went and played for Jamaica, and my flight home, actually, I got cancelled on me. So there was a good chance that I was going to be stuck in the UK, funnily enough, till probably November time, depending on what happens, because the country I live in's gone mad with COVID and how they deal with it. So it was even a chance that I'd be flying into the Big Bash with our overseas players, Alex Hales and Saki Bermud and those guys. So it was crazy. But now I'm here in Melbourne. I'm over halfway and I'm looking forward to getting out of here.
Yeah, I can imagine so, Green. It's not easy, is it? I mean, Lucy, did you ever have to do some quarantine? I can't say I have personally. I haven't been abroad, to be honest, since the pandemic hit, but have you had to do any quarantine, Lucy?
Not really, more just like bubbling, really. Yeah.
Bubbling, is that what we're calling it now? Biosecure bubbles, bubble life, bubbling, hashtag bubbling. I can't say I've done that either, to be honest. Maybe I've just been a bit more, you know, well, a bit less outgoing during the pandemic, apart from obviously going to Warwickshire matches, but it's not ideal, is it? And of course, yeah, it has been a very much focal point in the discussion of cricket in the past 12 months. But fortunately for the listeners, and of course for us here on the County Cricket Podcast, we aren't here to discuss the parameters of biosecure bubbles. We are, of course, here to talk about Chris Green's cricketing journey. So just for the listeners out there, today we're going to be talking to Greeny about his earliest cricketing memories. Then, of course, we're going to be touching upon his stint with the Birmingham Bears in 2019. And we will, of course, wrap up today's episode with a chat about Middlesex and, of course, a bit about the future, Greeny, in terms of what you want to achieve in the rest of your career. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, Chris, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Chris Green cricketing journey. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
First ever memory watching the game. I was born and raised in South Africa. So my dad was South African. My mum's English, Essex girl, don't judge. Sitting on the couch in South Africa, in Durban, with my dad, we're watching the cricket, and I don't really have memories of playing much at that age, so I must have been quite young still. And whether we were just mucking around in the backyard, he was introducing me, but he said, "Look, watch this guy, and if you're going to play cricket, model your game on him." And that guy turned out to be Jacques Callis, who carried South Africa for a long, long period of time. And the cool part about that was, you know, not only do I bowl off spin, so I didn't model him very well, but fast forward to my debut for the Thunder, or my first contract, and then the year we won it, I got to play alongside Jack Callis and then win the Big Bash alongside him. So it turned out to be a very special first memory of the game that, fast forward the best part of would have been 15 to 17 years, and I was playing cricket alongside my cricketing hero, and you know, playing at the MCG in front of 60,000 people and winning a trophy. So it was pretty cool.
Pretty cool, I think, is an understatement, to be honest. It's like me playing with Ian Bell. Lucy, it's like you bowling alongside Dale Steyn.
And stop.
You'd love that, wouldn't you, one day, Lucy? Same with me and Ian Bell, to be honest. But in terms of, I mean, that experience, what an experience. Not just playing with King Callis, an absolute legend of the game. In my opinion, the best all-rounder. I know that older listeners may say Sir Garfield Sobers, and again, a perfectly valid option. But for me, Jacques Callis could literally do it all. He could bat, he could bowl. He was an absolute gun in the slips as well. Mr. Bucket Hands. He always just seemed to generate gravity in the slips cordon. And of course, as a Sydney Thunder fan as well, Greeny, nice to have that memory again. 2015-16, wasn't it? Winning the Big Bash.
It was, yeah. So, you know, that first, I know I've jumped ahead of on my cricketing journey a little bit, but that first year of signing with the Thunder, 2014-15, they offered me their last spot. And, you know, contractually, we have to do a certain amount of appearances or whatever throughout the season, where you do media or, you know, a part of the sponsor events. And my first appearance for the Sydney Thunder was I had to go and meet Jacques Callis and walk with him while to get some shots for media and, you know, talk to him or for camera walking into his interview. So it was very much used. But the issue I had was I was sort of starstruck and lost for words, you know, meeting my cricketing hero, trying to talk to him. He introduced himself and said, "Hi, I'm Jacques." I was like, "Yeah, I know who you are, mate. I've been watching you play all my life, but I'm Chris." And yeah, so that was pretty cool. And then, you know, on the back of that, we then had a practice game and he chose to put his bag down next to me in the change rooms. And I didn't say a word the whole day. So that first season I had at the Thunder, 2014-15, the year before we won it, I couldn't pluck up the courage to talk to him much. I just sort of stood and stared a little bit, probably weirdly or creepily from afar or from close, and just observed and tried to learn as much as possible. And then fortunately, our coach kind of got wind of how much in awe I was of King Callis, as you put it, and then the next year helped me talk to him and form a really good relationship. And, you know, I'm looking forward to going over to South Africa when it all opens up and seeking him out for some golf.
Yeah, Callis does like his golf, doesn't he? As do most South Africans, to be honest. And of course, a slot here in England, we can't seem to get enough of the sport. But in terms of being starstruck, I'm going to be honest, I have a similar story. 2019 County Championship, Kent versus Warwickshire. And for those who know Warwickshire, of course, we had a legendary South African seam bowler by the name of Alan Donald, just the 330 test wickets. And he was coaching Kent. And I was sat in the South Stand at Edgbaston by the pavilion, and he walks up the stairs, and I'm thinking, Alan Donald just for a chat, get a photo with him. That's what I'm thinking in my head. What actually came out was, "Hi, Alan," just like a little timid voice, because I was absolutely starstruck by him. I said, "Hi, Alan." And he said, "Hello," in his South African accent, and walked off. I still think of that to this exact day, and that is why I don't get starstruck anymore. Lucy, have you ever been starstruck by a cricketer?
Yeah, so 2016, I think it was, Glamorgan signed Dale Steyn. I went to his first game in my South African shirt, all excited. After the match, he kind of just went around all like these little kids, and I was standing there like, oh my God, he's going to say hello. So I had all like this spiel of what I was going to say, and he walked up to me, and all I said was, I just looked at him, just eyeballed him, and he just kind of looked at me and went, like with a pen, he's like, give me a sign, and I just nodded, and then he walked off after having a picture, and I was like, why have I just done that? And it was just so embarrassing.
I love it.
It does happen though, doesn't it? I mean, as I said, it doesn't happen to me anymore. I'm going to be honest. I'm a lot more confident now compared to 2019. But when you do just idolise someone and there is an absolute legend and you know exactly who they are and you don't know how they're, you know, going to talk back to you, it can get overwhelming. Yeah. But as I said, you have to conquer that. You have to conquer that. And as soon as you do, yeah, life opens up some very, very nice opportunities indeed. And Greeny, just before we go on to obviously Australia and of course county cricket, just a little bit about South Africa. What do you remember about growing up there? Because Durban, of course, it's in the beautiful province of KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. You got the beach, you got Kingsmead Stadium as well, which is renowned for a little bit of turn, actually. compared to other South African stadiums. What was it like growing up in the Rainbow Nation?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's something I look back on and have a lot of fond memories. You know, my dad, all my dad's family's still there, and mum's family's all in England. So it's, my parents made that huge sacrifice to move to Australia for a better life for, I guess, all of us, but particularly my younger brother and I. But the memories I have, my mum and dad were both professional tennis players, so I pretty much learned to walk on a tennis court. So tennis was a huge part of my upbringing, as was all sports. And then, you know, you spoke about Kingsmead. We used to go and watch the Sharks play there. And the cool part about rugby in South Africa is everyone parks their car on the outer fields, and you go and have fries or barbecues, as it's called in other parts of the world, after the game, and you stay there. And you know, I started school at DPHS. So I left the beginning of grade two to go to Australia. So I was seven and a half. So I'd finished year one. You know, you just started making friends. Swimming was huge. I loved swimming. And then the beach was every weekend. We traveled down to the beach, either with my grandparents or with friends as well. So very, very fond memories, particularly holidays down the coast or going into the game reserves and you know, trying to spot lion and elephant and seeing everything. So it still holds a very special place in my heart, particularly with the amount of family I've got there as well.
Fair enough, Greeny. That is lovely to hear, of course. It's a country that I've always wanted to go to. And Luce, I mean, you've been there. You've been to South Africa. You've lived my dream. To be honest, that and India, they are my absolute two dream destinations. It's a nice country, isn't it, Lucy?
Yeah, I've been twice. I went down to Cape Town first time with Kruger, and then the second time I actually went to Durban. So yeah, I went down to, yeah, we went to Durban, then we went across like south. And then we went back up then to Umhlanga, which was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, beautiful spots.
I can't lie, Lucy, making me a tad bit envious. Tad bit envious. Hopefully one day we can visit South Africa. But of course, South Africa aside, Chris, in terms of your cricketing journey, we mentioned about the formative years in South Africa itself. You mentioned about playing multi-sports as well. Just before we get into your journey as an off-spin bowler, just one more thing about multi-sports. Do you think that is very, very helpful to young cricketers? Because I'm in the school of thought where you play multiple sports, the likes of hockey, rugby, tennis perhaps, and, you know, other sports. If you play those sports, you can generate more skill sets, can't you? You can actually widen your horizons in the game of cricket.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, personally, from my own journey and experience, I find playing a lot of sports was hugely beneficial from a mental standpoint. You know, tennis helped me and continues to help me structure my training. It helps me in high pressure scenarios because it is an individual game and you are out there trying to figure things out for yourself. And I think it's, you know, helped me become the bowler I am today from tennis. Then, you know, I think there's a huge social upside to it because, you know, speaking for me personally, soccer and tennis and cricket just made me meet a lot of people. It was a lot of fun. It was a great distraction. And, you know, I could never decide growing up as a kid between tennis and cricket until I turned 18, which one I wanted to be. You know, my dream was to play tennis at Wimbledon or cricket at the MCG in Lords because they were the ultimate in the game. And I wanted to do both. So it was something that I always had to try and balance, but I'm very grateful that I try to push it as long as I could because, I completely think that having those sports, whether it's from a skill set point of view, like hockey and cricket can translate, or a mental side, or more so just because I find if you focus on one thing for too long, you can burn out and, you know, get sick of it or start losing your love and passion for the game. As we see in a lot of individual sports where kids are started early or are being forced to start pursuing or professionalizing early. And I'm certainly grateful that my parents encouraged that because it helped me develop a love for the game even more so as I grew older.
Well, that is lovely to hear, Greeny. It really is. And I just found it funny beforehand you mentioned about Wimbledon and Lords because your mum actually appeared at Wimbledon. I didn't know that. I knew she was a professional tennis player, but she played at Wimbledon. That is quite cool.
Yeah, mum and dad both played there. So it was big shoes to follow if I wanted to pursue tennis.
Well, exactly. But fortunately, Green, of course, for us two here at the County Cricket Podcast, you chose the greatest sport on the planet, of course, leather and willow, yeah. Little bit of cricket. And I know, Lucy, of course, you've got some questions about Greeny's bowling, so I'll pass over to you for now.
Yeah, so obviously you mentioned tennis played a big part in your bowling. How would you describe yourself as a bowler?
Well, that's a good question. I growing up as a kid, I was a dirty medium pacer that didn't get much of a bowl all the way through juniors. And then when I was in under 12s, I was actually wicket keeping and bowling, but there were no off spinners in the team. There was only our wicket keeper was a leg spinner, and there were no off spinners, and I wasn't really bowling much. And I was the kid who just wanted the ball all the time. So I changed to off spin. So I'd keep for half the game and then bowl off spin for the other half of the game. And I gave away keeping very quickly. But you know, it was sort of self-taught, and my goal with bowling when I first started was, yes, to get wickets, but was always to go for as little amount of runs as possible and build pressure. And I think that was why I say that where tennis helped me is it helped me figure out the opponent's weaknesses. So, you know, the batter's weaknesses and trying to make them make an error to get their wicket. But at the same time, knowing that if I can build pressure or bowl a lot of dot balls or starve them of boundaries and only give them singles, then eventually something's going to give in, hopefully when I'm bowling, but it could happen when someone else is bowling, and it therefore benefits the team. So that's probably, in layman's terms, how I try and bowl. Just be as economical as possible and frustrate batters as much as I can, and still look to try and take wickets, but know that if I don't and I'm not going for runs, then the bowlers at the other end are going to be in a good position to take wickets.
See, I like that, because for those who don't know, from the podcast before, I'm an off spinner. Okay, obviously not as talented as Chris Green. I'm here talking about cricket, not playing it, of course, in the county circuit. But in terms of a spinner school of thought, you have one of two. And it's either you're going to be the building the pressure bowler, the dot ball bowler, accumulating that pressure at the other end for other bowlers to take the wicket and being very shrewd, or you're the aggressor. And in fact, Green, I'm just thinking, that's just jogged my memory, to be honest, thinking of your cricketing journey, really. Obviously, for my team, Birmingham, or, well, actually, Warwickshire is the county, but of course, the Bears, in the T20, you played alongside Jeetan Patel, who, of course, was a much more aggressive off-spinner. For the Thunder, you had Fawad Ahmed, of course. So it is interesting to hear that. And, of course, in terms of the actual bowling itself, I've always, always wanted to know about this. In terms of your bowling, for those who haven't watched Greeny, for me, I describe you as an arm ball specialist. So basically just firing that ball in time and time and time again, Yorkers, good pitch to arm balls as well. And I just imagine, for a batsman, it must be absolutely horrible to face. Horrible, because there's no spin, so it's not as though you can hit with the spin and go for boundaries. And there's also not enough pace. It's not as though you're facing a medium or fast bowler. It's just being jammed under your bat again and again and again. I would hate to face it, to be honest. And I know that another bowler that we spoke about beforehand, of course, was Imad Wazeem. Another one is Krunal Pandya. These real arm ball specialists, they just jam that ball in time and time again. So, so frustrating. Was that deliberate? Or is it because you don't like spinning the ball? What is it about your bowling style? How did that actually come about in the first place?
That's a good question. Look, I think I'd like you to broadcast that as much as possible and tell people how difficult I am to face. It'll help me. Because I don't think, I mean, I've never faced myself, obviously, but, I think it just came about from, I sort of assess the situation from when I'm bowling and you know, as off spinners in the modern era, or maybe even in the history of cricket, they're seen as not a huge threat, particularly to right-handed batters. And if you look at numbers, majority of batters are probably right-handed as well. So I kind of use that to my advantage. And you know, you go down to any net session at any level, the off spin is always the one that's getting hit out of the nets the most and first and has to go and run after their ball. So naturally, When I'm bowling in the nets, it obviously happens, but when you build pressure on batters in a game, they're going to default to what they do in practice and have always done, and that's try and hit a six. And you know, the more I don't go for six or four, as I said, if I starve boundaries, I know how frustrating that is on batters, because, you know, it's just an off spinner or he's not spinning the ball. How can I not score 10 plus and over? So that's really the basis of what I try and do. I try and go at sort of 5 to 7 and an over, depending on the situation. And you know, I think growing up in playing majority of my cricket in Australia, where a lot of the wickets we play on aren't that conducive to spin, the ball's, if you try and spin the ball on a non-spinning surface as an off-spinner, then you open yourself up to get hurt. As I travel around the world now, I'm fortunate enough to play in conditions where the ball can start spinning in the UK or in the Caribbean or in Pakistan or the UAE. And it gives me that ability to be a bit more aggressive. So it's just about weighing up the conditions, the situation and everything. And that's pretty much what I try and do. But knowing that the default of most batters is I need to be hitting the ball to the boundary. I need to be hitting sixes. This over needs to go for more than 10. If I can, you know, if it's 9, 8, 7, I know that I'm winning that over or being more, leaving them more frustrated than I am.
Well, that is interesting to hear that. I'm glad that I finally got the answer to that question. So it is very much deliberate then in terms of the bowling style. So that is very, very interesting to hear, Chris. And you mentioned there about spin in the UK. And of course, a good friend here on the County Cricket Podcast is Scott Steele. Used to play for Durham, now plays for Leicestershire. And I think back to 2019, and I'm so, so happy that I have the screenshot of this. I always send it to Scott when he starts giving it large. But there was one ball that you bowled up at the Riverside. It was on the Sky Sports cameras. To Scott Steele, he came charging down the pitch and it just kissed the surface, got a little bit of turn, castled his off stump. One of the the funniest deliveries. And on the screenshot, apologies, Scott, but I mean, you can just see his eyes were completely shut. His eyes were not on that ball at all. It was absolutely hilarious. So thanks for providing us with that, Chris. It's been very useful over the past few months.
No worries. It must have been the fierce pace or spin that I typically bowl with that forced him to close his eyes out of fear. So again, just keep broadcasting how dangerous I can be with the ball, please.
Well, yeah, Lucy, I'm sure you won't have a problem with that either. Will you, Lucy? You like to see green?
Not at all. Absolutely.
Well, there you go, Chris.
Yeah.
Maybe a deal in the future, Sapphire Gardens, Lucy. Just sell Cardiff a bit, maybe.
Yeah, I love Cardiff. Played there and commentated there. It's beautiful. And, you know, I spent a lot of time. Funnily enough, I played some second 11 for Surrey in 2015 and we played a three-day game and some T20s there. So I've been to all the night spots and all the day spots in Cardiff and I love it.
Well, fair enough. I mean, listeners, if Chris Green does join Glamorgan, you know why. Agent Reese here on the podcast, getting the deal done. And of course, I think that's a nice way to get into our conversation about county cricket. And before we get into Middlesex, of course, 2021, Lucy, I'll pass over to you for that in due course. We do, of course, have 2019 with my county of Warwickshire, a year which, let's just say, didn't quite go to plan on the pitch in any format. Let's be completely honest. I mean, half the squad got injured. It was an absolutely torrid year for Warwickshire. We lost Ollie Stone, Henry Brooks, Ollie Hannon-Dalby. At one point, we had to bring in James Wainman from the second 11. And then, of course, we had the likes of Toby Lester and Ben Mike joining us on loan. And Chris, in the midst of all that carnage, the injury chaos happening in the Midlands, you joined the Birmingham Bears on a T20 deal for the 2019 T20 Blast. So just before we get into the season itself and, of course, the tournaments, what were your first impressions of Edgbaston and Birmingham?
I remember that season fondly because I was in Canada playing a tournament over there and Ashton Agar got injured. So he was on that injury list as well. So I got wind of it. And I can tell the long story about getting there, if you like.
Go on.
I was in Canada.
Was that for Toronto, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, Toronto Nationals.
Toronto Nationals. So we were doing really well. Qualified and everything. And then my manager rang me saying, Warwickshire have signed you. As soon as you get knocked out, you need to get on the plane. I was like, okay, brilliant, excited, county cricket. My girlfriend was over with me. We booked a holiday to Vancouver. So we canned that. But I said to him, I was like, oh, do I need my UK passport? He's like, yeah. It's like, oh, I don't have it with me. Is that going to be an issue? And he said, well, we need to get it there. So I looked at a courier option. A courier was going to take 2 or 3 days fast-tracked. And if we'd lost the next game, which was that night, I would have had to fly out the next day and the deal would have been off the table. So that one was gone. So I rang mum and dad. I was like, look, I need you to get on an aeroplane. I'll fly you over. And I was thinking mum would come with me. She could come to England, see family. But both of them were too busy with work. So I was stuck and I threw it open to Facebook, my friendship group and my grade cricket club. I said, look, random one, is anyone able to get on a 4 p.m. flight? It was 6:30 in the morning. I said, is anyone able to get on a 4 p.m. flight? I'll pay for your flights. You've got 3 nights accommodation in Toronto. You can come to as many T20 games as you like and you can obviously extend the flight, do what you want with it. All you need to do is bring my passport. So one of the guys from our cricket club jumped at it, brought my passport over. He was the courier. We ended up winning that game, won the next game, lost the next. So I flew out straight after a game, landed 8 a.m. in the UK and drove straight up to Edgbaston and played against Notts that night. So someone tweeted me after saying, Chris Green's just played 2 games in less than 24 hours in 2 different countries. So it was a crazy start. It rained, of course, but I was fielding out in front of the Holly Stand and I absolutely loved it. It was, you know, it was miserable. The ground was moving because I was jet lagged. I didn't know where I was, but they were great lads, welcomed in well. Jeetan Patel was captain, so I was looking forward to, you know, working with him. And we had a game 2 days later. So, you know, unfortunately we lost that one. I remember going home, sleeping the whole day and then coming back and we won the next game. So I kind of felt a little bit more settled, but it was a crazy set of circumstances to get over there. But something I was really excited to do, playing county cricket for the first time for a great club at a fantastic venue.
A great club. Thank you for that, Green. I mean, we've been plugging your podcast. Thank you very much for plugging the mighty Warwickshire, of course, county champions in 2021. And I was there for your debut. I was there with my friends. In the West Stand. It was the Motor Point at the time. It's now been renamed because of sponsorship reasons. But yeah, we were there for that. And as you said, it was a miserable night, wasn't it, in terms of the weather? I mean, it was just rain, heavy rain. Heavy rain as well.
I think we lost on Duckworth Lewis, and I remember facing Imad Wasim and thinking the ground was like moving. So it was an interesting start. But I got a wicket, I think. I didn't get smashed, and it was respectable, I hope. You can be the one that provides honest feedback, I hope.
Well, I've actually got the stats. I did do some digging, actually. I do remember you bowling, though, because obviously as a Thunder fan, I remember that night because my friend had never seen you bowl. And he was like, Aaron, who is this fella? Who is this fella? And I said, honestly, just watch him. He's a very different style bowler. And funny enough, of course, we were the second innings, weren't we? So, no, we were the first innings. Notts were chasing. And Joe Clark went out and him and Hales just smashed it during the power play and we got hammered. But in the first innings, we'd seen Imad Wasim. And I just said to him, He's like him. He's not going to spin it. He's just going to jam it in there. And in terms of the performance, none for 10 from 2 overs. So,
there you go. I didn't get a wicket. I thought I got a wicket, but maybe I didn't. I was happy with that.
Considering you're jet lagged, none for 10.
I remember bowling at the power play to my mate Hales, and then Clark was going nuts. And then I think the game finished early through Duckworth Lewis, or was Shorten, wasn't it?
Yeah. I got very, very wet on that night because, I didn't bring a coat, which was a terrible decision in hindsight. But fortunately, in the West Stand, there is concourse. So after getting absolutely drenched, I did dry off a little bit in the indoor bit. But in terms of that season as a whole then, Greeny, how would you describe your time with the Bears, of course? In terms of the results on the field, maybe not the greatest of season for Warwickshire. I think we finished second bottom, if I'm not mistaken, in the North group. But in terms of the experience, in terms of the dressing room, you know, environment, and of course the fans here in the Midlands, how would you describe your time with the Bear and Ragged staff?
Oh, I loved it. And you know, I was due to go back the next year and captain them for the full season. So it was a pity that COVID actually hit to prevent me from doing so. You know, you spoke about them being depleted through a lot of injury and whatever. So we had a lot of different bowlers coming in and a lot of new guys and young guys coming in and playing and sort of showcasing what they can do. And we fought hard and we were respectable, but, you know, we did struggle for results-wise. But great group of guys, great place to play. Two fond memories that I have playing was obviously that first one, but then two others I had was the Worcester Derby at home at Edgbaston. I think it was a long weekend, so a couple of my mates had come up and they were staying with me in my flat. But again, I was fielding in front of that Holly Stand, and I remember just think I nearly missed a delivery being bowled because there were guys dressed up as Skittles, and then they had their large mate as a bowling ball, and it started out very friendly. They would just run up and he'd barge, and everyone would watch. But by the end of it, when we were fielding, and I was watching, and this guy was just running and launching himself into it, and I was so entertained by it. Yeah, so that was a fond memory. And then the other one was we were playing a game, and it wasn't a big crowd, but it was at the same time that Ben Stokes was batting with Leach against the Aussies in the
Northamptonshire.
Yeah,
it was
against Northampton. Yep. Yeah, and all of a sudden, everyone in the crowd just disappeared. Yep. They were still in the ground because we could hear them, but not a single person was watching the game. All the players on the field were asking for constant updates. You know, there wasn't any PMMOA that day, so everyone had their phones constantly checking the score. I was like, is anyone going to focus? The umpires, the players, the crowd, everyone was focused on the Ashes game. And no one really was worried about the T20 game happening in front of them. So it was a couple of interesting and different experiences, but, you know, it was a great club. I was very well looked after. The fans were fantastic. And, yeah, again, disappointed that the timing of COVID prevented me from going back in 2020 and captaining them, but still keep in touch with a lot of the guys. And, you know, Ian Bell looked after me recently when I went up there for commentary and played some golf and everything. So, yeah, really, really fond memories of it.
Well, that is lovely to hear, Chris. And of course, you mentioned about the fans. I'll just give you my perspective as well before, you know, we talk about that Northants game just a little bit, because I do have a question for you, Lucy, with regards to that day and Ben Stokes up at Headingley. But in terms of your connection with the fans, I must admit, Chris, you made a very, very good impression. I will say that. Always seems to have time for the fans, always very friendly, very approachable. I will give you that. And as I said, here in the Midlands, always welcome back. Edgbaston, there is a phrase, once a bear, always a bear, and that is very, very much true. And in terms of that game, I do remember that because I have a good friend, he's called Max Stokes, Villa on Tour on YouTube, big, big YouTuber with Aston Villa. And it was his first ever T20 game, and it was a lovely day, beautiful day at Edgbaston, sun shining. And of course, it was day four of the England versus Australia test match. And in fact, Greeny, who were you supporting on that day? Australia,
yeah.
In terms of that day, it was a gorgeous day. It actually ended up being a really good match as well towards the end. I know Northants won, but Henry Brooks actually almost got it back at the end. And as you said, it was just about halfway through the Northants innings, everyone started to filter out. The bars behind the hollies, because there's the screens, people just behind there, and you're just hearing cheering and everything. And it got to the point, I'm sat here with Max, and he says, Aaron, what on earth is going on? Does this usually happen at the cricket? Because this was his first cricket game. And he's probably thinking, what on earth's going on here? I'm used to football. Yeah. Everyone stays from minute one to minute 90. And I said, well, basically, Max, England are playing and we're almost going to pull off the impossible. So I got my phone out. So I'm still watching the T20, still sat in the RS Wyatt. And I got my phone out for those last few overs. Now TV, England versus Australia. And when Ben Stokes hit that cover drive or that nice, powerful shot into the covers off of Pat Cummins, he got the biggest roar of the day, didn't it? No one could believe it happened.
All the players on the field were celebrating as well. I tell you, I couldn't believe what was going on.
No, it was incredible. Lucy, as I said, I did want to, you know, ask you this. Where were you on that day? I don't think I've asked you before, but when Ben Stokes hit those winning runs, that partnership with Jack Leach, where were you on that day?
So this is quite a funny story. So at my cricket club, I'm a coach for my under-13s, and I also help out with the under-17s. Or the 15s at the time, sorry. So I'm down at this club called Pont y Lais, which is near Swansea. And they play in a finals day, a little T20 finals day. So they've won their little zone. And they're playing. And next thing, all you can hear is everyone cheering from the clubhouse. And I'm there like, oh yeah, you know, that game's on. And then I was like, oh, you know, it kind of clicked. And I was like, oh, I'll put it on my phone. So I put it on my phone and I was scoring the game at the time. And, you know, I was just kind of watching and then watching my phone. And part of my score, and I was doing the scoreboard as well. And it hadn't been updated for about three overs. So literally everyone on the field was just shouting at me. And I just literally came back going, all right, you know, I'm watching this really important game, by you? And I was like, yeah, but we're a finals day. And I was like, priorities, you know. but yeah, and then I think they finished like something the exact same time. And then, like, literally no one knew the score because it was the end of the 20 overs. And they were like, oh, who's won? And I was like, oh, well, hang on. And they're like, no, we're on about our game. And I was like, all right, okay, sorry. But yeah, that's like the one time my concentration is gone during a game, I think.
Yeah, when Ben strokes it, those winning runs. What a story that is. The fact that someone, who actually came up to you and had the nerve to say, our game's more important, under 13's finals day?
I'll tell you who it was. It was my dad, who was the coach for the under 15s.
I love it.
Mr. Reese, yeah. get your priorities in check. I mean, Ash is 2019. The series was on the line. I mean, I say should have given you a special exemption for that, Lucy, personally. But of course, yeah, your dad obviously had his other priorities on that day. So, Greeny, before we get into, of course, Middlesex in the future, okay, our kind of concluding segment for today's episode, which I must admit I thoroughly enjoyed so far. It's made me laugh. But in terms of just a personal thing, I suppose, for you, this happened, of course, after Warwickshire and happened during the last year's Big Bash, BBL 10. And as I alluded to before, I'm a Sydney Thunder fan. So this was kind of disappointing, to be honest. But when you got your bowling ban, just in terms of that whole situation, first of all, when did you find out you're going to be banned? Because I'm going to be honest, I was absolutely shocked by it when I first heard it.
Yeah, look, I was as well. It came sort of out of the blue. And, you know, at first it was a massive kick in the gut. So I went up and got tested and found out we were in Melbourne about to play at the MCG and got a call and said, unfortunately, you failed. Just a few of your balls were slightly over. Of the 36 I bowled, I can't remember. There weren't that many, but it was only 1 or 2 degrees in it. And it was my quicker ball that had failed because I had to replicate my action in the game I was reported on. And unfortunately, my coach was up there with me and he said, look, this isn't how Greeny usually bowls. His technique's clearly slipped. Can you look at or compare with other footage? And given the rules of the whole reporting and testing scenario, they can't. You have to replicate how you bowl in that game. So my action in that game wasn't as clean, if you like, as it usually is because I'd been on the road for so long and was, you know, how it came as more a surprise and shock. I'd spent time at the academy up in Brisbane for about 4 weeks with the analysts of Cricket Australia. They were filming me and working on my bowling with the spin coaches of the academy up there. And then 2019 was probably, well, at that time, it was the best year of my career. I went to Canada, edged in straight to CPL. I was performing in all tournaments, straight to T10, performed well there, started well with the Thunder. We were 3 from 3, got told I got picked up in the IPL. So I was at this real peak. And then everything sort of came crashing down with this complete shock out of the blue. There'd been no talk of it before. But, you know, looking back on it, it gave me an opportunity and I saw an opportunity to look at it as a training block. And you know, my goal was not only just to come back, was to come back bigger and better. And so I started training straight away and I was fortunate that I had a lot of support around me, particularly from my coach, but also, you know, teams, Warwickshire stood by me, Kolkata Knight Riders stood by me. They said, look, we want you back still. It's not going to change anything. And then COVID hit. So 2 weeks before my final test, and I'd previously gone up and cleared a practice test. But 2 weeks before my final test, COVID hit and everything shut down. Couldn't fly up to Brisbane. And then my training block extended another 3 months. But, you know, the blessing in disguise there, if you like, it gave me a 6 months training block. And yes, I missed the end of the Big Bash and felt like I let down my teammates and my club because we were in a good position. And, you know, I'm someone that loves to contribute to the team and was contributing to the team really well at the start of that season. But I missed no cricket. I came back. It gave me time. I came back in the CPL and, you know, performed really well, got some career best figures and then went on and made my IPL debut. So, you know, it was a really good little feather in the hat, if you like, to justify a lot of the hard work. And I've learned so many lessons from that, just more in terms of, you know, when everything's on the go. And I think COVID's probably given a lot of people that lesson in itself that we need to stop, take a step back, look at ourselves, look at our lives, where we're at, hit the refresh button, and, you know, just look at yourself from the outside in. And you know, for me, you know, from a cricketing standpoint, that means look at my physical, technical, but more so also my mental side. And that's been my big thing now. And I think it's proven to help me be more successful coming out of it and from it and moving forward since that ban at the start of 2020, yeah. I think it was. Yeah, 2020. And, you know, it's nearly the best part of 2 years ago now. So, yeah, as hurtful and as shocking as it was, it's I look back on it now as a really positive experience and something that, you know, as weird as it sounds, I'm actually very grateful that it did happen, because I think it gave me that next little kick that I needed to continue to take my career forward. And it's helped me learn a lot about myself, the game and everything.
Well, I'll tell you what, Greeny, that is a very, very, very admirable way of looking at it, because obviously the initial shock of it, I mean, as I said, I could not believe it. I genuinely could not believe it, having watched you for years for the Thunder. And of course, in that exact same summer for Warwickshire, there didn't seem to be anything, you know, wrong with the action. And then it was partway through the Big Bash, of course. I'm a Thunder fan, so there is a little bit of bias there. But you take one of your premier bowlers out of the entire competition. They say you can't bowl. You can bat. You were allowed to bat in the competition as well. But I mean, I just could not believe it. I could not for the life of me think what on earth had gone on. But the fact that, as you mentioned, it allowed you to refresh, allowed you to refocus. You've come back, of course, played for the Talawars as well, which is a massive bonus as well as a Talawars fan. Nice to see you playing for us instead of against us for the Guyana Amazon Warriors. But now, as I said, that is a very, very good way of looking at it. Because I imagine with a lot of bowlers, they'd get banned. They'd probably, you know, feel a little bit hard done by. Probably eat them up inside, and then they'd come back and, you know, not have that same mentality. So no, I respect that. I rate that very, very highly. And of course, in 2021, Greeny, you came back to county cricket, which was very, very nice indeed. And Lucy, I know you got some questions for Greeny about Middlesex.
Yeah, how did like, obviously you signed for Middlesex, how did that all come about?
Now there's sort of it came about, like, COVID again probably helped me with that opportunity. Majeeb was their signing for the full season. He'd done well there in the past and was struggling to get out of Afghanistan due to visa and COVID restrictions and border restrictions in the UK. So I guess as a similar sort of bowler, I wouldn't say I've got as much mystery as Majeeb does, but bowling in the power play and I guess bowling at key times is something that I love to do. So I was away with some mates on a golf trip and we'd finished golf for the day. And as you do on golf trips or on boys trips, you tend to be awake at all hours or the wrong hours. And I got a message through from my manager and I sort of left it. And then I had two missed calls and I rang him and he's like, mate, Middlesex want you to get on a plane ASAP. Can you do it? I was like, absolutely. But can't do it right now because all the forms that I need, you're going to have to do because I will not fill them in correctly. So that was on our first night of the trip as well. So it was a 2-night trip just up the coast, not far away. So I was ready to leave the next morning if I needed to. He got all the forms sorted. I got my vaccine on the Monday and I flew out on the Wednesday, think 3rd of June or something, and straight in. To the UK, being from a green country, I was excited just to be back in England playing cricket, but even more so to be playing at Lords. It was something that I didn't know what to expect. I expected incredible things, but not until I walked into the venue. I'd been and watched cricket there before. I'd actually been through the pavilion. I played in a sponsor day at Lords as well, so I played, but I don't technically call that playing there, but being a local player or the overseas player for Middlesex at Lords was an incredible, incredible start to the 2021 season and my time abroad. And I still have to pinch myself talking about it. The fact that I went and played at Lords and trained at Lords, they put me up in West Hampstead. So I used to just run into Lords, go to the gym or train and walk into the game. It was a really, really, really cool experience.
Yeah, it's the dream. Let's be honest, you've had two county cricket stints at Edgbaston and the home of cricket. It's remarkable, to be honest, how life pans out that way. And of course, Green, I suppose we have to ask, what do you say was the highlight of your summer with Middlesex? Of course, apart from the PCA charity match where you met our very own Lucy Rees, what do you say was the highlight of your summer?
Yeah, that was awesome. That's the mini Lords up there. I think the two highlights were firstly playing there. The amount of times that I was standing on that field and I made sure of it. Luckily, I've got good people around me that just said, soak it in as much as you can. And there were moments I was just standing there in the middle of the Lords, looking around, being like, I can't believe I'm actually here, dreaming about it as a kid, to now tick off playing at the MCG and playing at Lords in front of, you know, big crowds. It's been absolutely surreal experience and a dream come true. And then, the other highlight, probably on a more personal note, was getting some career best figures. Again, you know, talking about coming back from my ban and putting in a lot of hard work and getting an opportunity to play as an overseas player was really cool for a lot of hard work to pay off on what I'd worked towards, and particularly bowling some hard overs for them at the end of the power play and at the death. So it was really, really special.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And of course, Lucy, before we get on to your bit about T20 leagues, which is going to be very, very interesting, I must admit, it's a cracking question that Lucy actually put forward. But just in terms of your season stats, basically, Greeny, just for the listeners out there, for Middlesex, in 2021, 10 wickets in 7 games, which isn't too bad. Obviously, those figures are 5 for 32. The only thing that there is, though, the economy rates.
Yeah. It was a bit higher than I would have liked, and it was a game at Radlett that hurt me against Hampshire. Wow, that place was tiny, and the wicket was flat, and James Vincent Darcy Short just had a day out on everyone, but particularly me. So I copped it. It's something that's going to happen at times, and yeah, that day was one to forget. But fortunately, I got the opportunity to get some of my own back with the bat and be there at the end and hit some winning runs. And I was very happy. I worked hard on my batting leading into this season, or I start after the Big Bash leading into this time away in England and the CPL, and to get some opportunities with the bat to perform and get my team over the line was something I wanted to do. So the economy wasn't as good as it would have liked, but the batting numbers I was very happy and proud of as well.
So going back to obviously your T20 season this year, and obviously the one you've had with Birmingham, how would you say our T20 competition compares to other T20 leagues you played in?
I think it's a great league. Look, I get asked this a lot, to compare the leagues and which one I like the most. I think the thing that I love about the Blast and playing cricket in the UK is, you guys have such terrible winters that by the time the sun comes out, everyone is so happy to be there. They love cricket. It's a fantastic time of the year. So it's a great event. And that's why I was a big fan of the 100 as well. It was, you know, it's the time of the year where everyone's happy, enjoying themselves, coming out and watching cricket. So there's different atmospheres at all grounds, Lords, Edgbaston, Kent, some of the outgrounds as well. So playing in front of some different atmospheres where everyone just sings along the whole time. You know, it was the summer of singing football songs anyway. So I really, really enjoyed that. And then from a standard point of view, I think it's really strong. There's more teams in England than there is in Australia, so the talent pool is diluted. But when you have overseas players and it presents opportunities for new young players to be coming through all the time. And just a few that I've played with over there, Blake Cullen at Middlesex or Henry Brooks at Birmingham, those two fast bowlers coming through are, I think, destined for really big things. Henry's obviously got opportunity with England Lions already, and I think Blake Cullen's going to be the next fast bowler for England coming through the ranks as well. So I really enjoyed it. I get looked after really well as the overseas player, and I love playing there. And then I think added in the fact that I've got family in the UK that travel and come and watch all the times, it makes it really, really special.
Well, that is lovely to hear, Greeny. Of course, you're always welcome here in the county circuit. We do make you feel welcome as fans. But just one question about that, I'll have to ask this, because you mentioned about different atmospheres and you mentioned Canterbury. And I'm going to be honest, I've been to Canterbury, I've been to Chelmsford, two of the most partisan places you will ever go as an opposition player or an opposition fan. Where would you say have you played which has had the most partisan crowd? Not necessarily in the UK, but just in your cricketing journey, where have you had the most hostile crowd?
Probably in the Caribbean. Guyana and Trinidad have, I think, the most partisan crowd. So playing for Guyana for 3 years was fantastic. Every home game, you have yellow flags, everyone shouting for you that, you know, you get, you, I could have gone for 100 off my four overs and got, you know, three ducks in the game and they still would have absolutely loved it. And then similarly, you go to Trinidad and you just, they are so biased towards Trinidad, but they love it. You know, the passion for the game. I enjoyed Canterbury. Canterbury was an interesting experience, I would say. We were at it was good weather. So there were a lot of people with shirts off, sunburnt, and with a few choice words to say to me on the boundary. But I'm glad I got my own back and got a hat trick and a few wickets. So I enjoy it. I love interacting. You know, as you said at Edgbaston earlier, I think it's a big part of the game that I love is interacting with the crowd and having as much fun on the field as I can. It's something that I don't try and do on purpose, but I always want to try and play with a smile. It is a game that I love and people are coming out there to enjoy themselves as well. So if they're coming hard at me, I always try and take the mickey out of them or have some fun or whatever. Or if they're supporting me, then obviously I really appreciate it.
I do like that little tale about Canterbury. As I said, I could not believe it. Like, I've heard things about Canterbury. I went down there for the quarterfinals this year. It is incredibly hostile. I could not believe it because I've been to Chelmsford, right? Citadel, yeah. Chelmsford. You know that that's going to be intimidating because they make it intimidating down in Essex.
Especially when you get their golden boy, Darren Stevens, out. You don't want to do that.
Not just their golden boy, our golden boy as well. The GOAT, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Darren Stevens, 45 years of age. Give him a 10-year contract.
Man. Exactly.
You mentioned about getting him out. What was the reaction like? Because obviously myself and Lucy, we haven't bowled Darren Stevens. We haven't had the pleasure of getting the man, the myth, the legend himself out. But what's that like bowling to Darren Stevens, a 45-year-old bona fide legend of county cricket? What was that experience like?
Well, yeah, I only had that luxury to bowl at him for one ball because he was a part of a hat-trick. So I probably ruined the atmosphere of the crowd at Canterbury, but he got his own back. I think I hit him for a six and then got out next ball. So I did get out to Darren Stevens. So I got him out and he got me out, but I hit a six and I think he's the best player in the world.
I love him. I think I'd feel sorry for him if I got him out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree, Lucy. He's just a legend, isn't he? 45 years of age. How he has not had an England call-up is absolutely...
Get him in the Ashes, bud.
Well, exactly. It's funny you mention that because yesterday on Twitter, of course, for those who knew about the IPL, Glenn Maxwell was fantastic last night. And I saw on Twitter, I think it was Adam Collins, and he said Glenn Maxwell for the Ashes. And basically, I just thought, you know what? If Australia can have Glenn Maxwell, we have to have the GOAT. Darren Stevens bowling his dibbly-dobbly bowl. You know,
imagine.
Hitting some six. He hit 25 sixes in this year's county championship, the most in the entire tournament. He's still got it. He's still got it. Hashtag Darren Stevens for England. Let's get that trending on Twitter, folks. But Greeny, before we end today's podcast then, we do just have a couple more questions, of course. And one of them is about a minor county, one of the national counties, because some people may not actually know this, but this year you played for Bedfordshire in a game.
I did, yeah. So after I finished with Middlesex, I stayed on, did some commentary because I would have had to come back to Australia, quarantine 14 days, then leave for the CPL, then come back and do this quarantine again. So I thought, you know, bugger that. I'm not doing 28 days of quarantine for 4 months away. And then, you know, I would have got out of quarantine and been locked down. So I may have missed out on that CPL opportunity anyway. So I stayed in England, played some club cricket for Brentwood and Essex and did some commentary on the 100. And one of the guys from Brentwood said, do you fancy a one-day game against Northants for Bedfordshire? I was like, when is it? He said, it's a Tuesday. I was like, every day is a Sunday for me while I'm here, so I may as well go and play. So I went and turned out for them. Bowled well, batted terribly.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that, Greeny. Right, I have got the stats in front of me, of course.
Yeah.
Can you remember the exact figures and, of course, the score with the bat?
We'll start with the bad news. I think I got a duck second ball, or maybe like one off two or three, maybe.
One from six. But
I got a run. Yeah, I don't remember getting a run, but I got out to that Simon Kerrigan. I remember that. And then bowling wise, I can't remember. I got a few wickets. I think I got three or four wickets.
You did indeed. 4 for 51 from 10 overs. Not bad, that.
Yeah, I'll take that. I had to bowl at the death a bit. Yeah, it was all right. I enjoyed it. Again, North Ants, I'd love to bat there more often. I got a bit overexcited, I think, when I walked out the bat because the ball just races away. But, yeah, good place to bowl as well. And, yeah, I enjoyed the experience.
Well, that's good to hear, Greeny. And, of course, that is quite unique, actually, I suppose, because it's not usually that way round where you play for the first-class counties and then play for a national county, of course. It's usually you play for national county and then make the next step up. So fair play to you for playing for Bedfordshire in 2021. And Lucy, of course, just before we do get on to, obviously, the future, just have any more questions for Greeny before we end today's podcast?
Not really. I think we've covered really everything, yeah.
Oh, fair enough then. Right then, if that is the case, Lucy, we shall get on to our final question, Greeny, to wrap up today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. Can we expect to see Chris Green back in county cricket in the immediate future? Would you want to come back?
I would love to come back. I'd love to come back next year. You know, I think it's as I've said, I love playing county cricket over there, and it's a fantastic opportunity, and I'll be doing everything I can and continue to do everything I can to put in good performances to hopefully get a gig over there.
Well, fair enough, Green. And of course, always welcome back here on the beautiful shores of England and Wales. I mean, especially for Lucy Glamorgan. Hey, who knows? Maybe one day.
I'm going to tick off the triangle, London, Edgbaston, Cardiff. So Lucy, put in a word for me.
Fantastic. Right then, Greeny. I mean, that is a great, great way to end what has been a thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining podcast. It has been an absolute pleasure getting you on, of course. A former Bear, I mean, a Jamaica Talawar and a Sydney Thunder player. I mean, doesn't get much better than that. Maybe just an RCB contract and then perfect. A bit like Colin de Grandon did back
in.
If
you can get me that, you can have the commission.
Hey, Agent Viles is on the case. But in terms of just before we end then, Greeny, just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example? I know you've got a massive following compared to us, but anything to blog or promote just before we end?
Oh, no. Like, I would just say I'm very interactive on social media. So anyone listening, feel free to chug us a follow or a message. I'll be sure to respond as best I can, particularly while I'm in quarantine. So if you've got any feedback on the amount of dribble I've just spoken, then please feel free to send it through.
Well, there you go, folks. I think that is a lovely way to end, of course. If you want to chat to Greeny, we will leave the links in the podcast description below. But that is it from us three here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.